Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I am Justin Nasiri. Normally, on Mondays and Thursdays, I meet with either military veterans to learn about their career path or world-class experts to focus on skills that would be helpful to the veteran community in their civilian career. If you're listening to this, this is our Saturday episode, which we call Behind Beyond the Uniform. It's much more informal. It's just me. And I cover things in a mullet format of business up front, party in the back. Feel free to stick around for any and all that serves you. So just a little bit of business up front and then a lot around the party in the back. So in terms of business up front, first one, as a reminder, on these Saturdays, we're going to start in November to do some rebroadcasts. We are 300 episodes deep, and it can be very difficult sometimes to find new episodes that you haven't heard before and search that on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. So to help with that, two Saturdays a month, we're going to start trying out a new thing of doing a rebroadcast. And the way that we're choosing the episodes that we're rebroadcasting are on our community's recommendations. So Steve and Kathleen and Rick from our team, they've already picked out their favorite episode. You'll be hearing those soon. And to make this more interesting, not only am I going to play a clip from the person who recommended it about why they enjoyed that episode, but I'll also connect with the original person, if possible, to have a little tack on at the end to give you an update on what they've been up to in the last year or two since we spoke. And so be sure to check that out. But I wanted to just open it up to you. If you go to our contact page, there's a way to either submit in text or record an audio of your favorite episode. And we'd love to see submissions from you and use that to guide finding those episodes from a year, two, or even 3 years ago that newer listeners might not be aware of. Second of all, we have some new events. So on our website right now, if you haven't already, we've got on October 23rd at 5 p.m. Pacific, our very first town hall. The town hall is just literally giving you some transparent updates on what's going on at Beyond the Uniform, trying to get feedback. Steve and I have been working on two major new efforts, and don't want to disclose that widely yet, but in the town hall, we'll talk about that. And we'll also make space for any feedback, any questions, any dialogue. It's very informal. It's the Beyond the Uniform equivalent of a webinar. October 29th at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, we're doing a Veterans in Consulting webinar. It's an hour. It's great. If you haven't checked out the little animated video about this, check it out. We've got a ton of people signed up for it and really excited about that. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter because I've already added, if you go to our event section, I've already added one event for November. We're in the process of adding two more. And it may be up by the time you listen to this, so check out the events page. But we have been overwhelmed and delighted by the response we've seen to the webinars. We're going to keep up that pace, and it seems like this is a good fit for us and very excited for these. So be sure to check those out, sign up, and as a reminder for these events, even if you can't attend that time, if you sign up, we're going to email you with a video copy of the presentation so you can check it out even if you can't attend live. We're not broadcasting these as a podcast. We're not putting them on the site, so you're only way to get access is to sign up, so make sure you do that. I also got a question that I wanted to answer. If you use that contact section of our website, if you submit a question, I'm happy to address that here on air. The reason I do that is that it's just easier for me, and also I find that you may be surprised. You may think that your question is really unique, but the truth is that usually your question is applicable to many of our audiences. And so to make this a little bit more scalable, I want to amplify the impact of answering these questions. So here's the question that I wanted to cover today. This person wrote in, they said, "How do you become an executive? I am an E8 transitioning to business. How do I make the jump from Army, quote, personnel manager to 175,000 plus business executive? What does this career progression look like?" Well, first of all, thank you for your question. I will give you my own very biased thoughts on this. I've got five different thoughts for you. My intention is to help. Take it all with a grain of salt. It's just one man's opinion. but that one man has happened to have done 300 interviews, so I think there's some credence here. So first of all, it bears without saying, my little asterisk is salary is just one aspect of a job. You should be considering, obviously, hours, lifestyle, interest, opportunity for career growth, just compatibility culturally. There's so many soft factors, and you're not alone. Most people tend to just zoom in on a dollar amount. And I would just say, you know, obviously, if you're working 120 hours a week and making $175,000, or if you're working 20 hours a week and making $125,000, those are not equal comparisons, right? And so I'm guessing you know that, but I like to just throw that out for newer listeners. The second thing that comes to mind for me, and for the rest of these answers, I'll assume that for whatever reason, that number, $175,000 per year, is for some reason sacred. You believe that it's what you need to survive, or it just fulfills a lifelong dream, whatever it is. So the next thing that I would add is you need clarity. And obviously, this is just a text, short text that I received. One of the reasons I'm excited for the town hall and the webinars is we can have a little bit more of a dialogue. I could ask more questions that would help me give a more strategic and tactical answer. But based on what I know, I would just say, look, you wrote in there, you want to transition to be a business executive. In my opinion, and I'm not meaning to give offense here, but in my opinion, business executive is me saying, like, I want to be an army man or an army woman. It's just incredibly generic, incredibly vague. There's not, it makes me suspicious that you might not have researched yet all the different options. And so what I would encourage for you, and the way that we have set up our normal podcast interviews and the way we do, is we want to cover specific, and I'll give you four different categories, specific industries: management consulting, finance, nonprofits, legal, government, public service, etc. You can also look at functional areas: sales, operations, marketing, human resources. You can look at company sizes, 11 to 50 employees, or 500 to 1,000, or over 10,000, and then the geographic location. And you can kind of put stakes in the ground on each of those. And again, in my opinion, the more stakes you put in the ground, the easier this is going to be for you. The more you can start to get clarity about, hey, I'm interested in technology as an industry. I'm thinking about sales, business development, and marketing as a functional role. I really want to look at companies that are between 50 and 200 employees, and I'm interested in San Francisco, New York, LA, Chicago. That is awesome. If you can get that level of clarity, and our interviews are meant to try and help you get that clarity. So you can talk, you can basically sit in on my coffee chat with someone who does sales and say, you know what, that doesn't sound interesting. Or you might sit in on finance and be like, hey, that sounds interesting, let me learn more. The other aspect of that getting clarity is networking. That's why we have our Networking 101 webinar. And we'll do another one of those, but helping you find people to get conversations going and start getting specificity. So that's the second point. The third point, and again, I'm meaning to be direct and honest and not in any way condescending. $175,000 salary is pretty lofty, to be honest. My background was 5 years as an officer on submarines, going to Stanford Business School, which is arguably one of the top three business schools in the world. And after that, I had a job offer to go to McKinsey & Company Consulting, top three consulting companies in the world. And that at the time, this is 10 years ago, but at the time, is that right? Was it 10 years ago? Yeah, shit. No, maybe, wait. wait a second, I'm losing my mind. Yeah, that was 10 years ago. So it's probably more than that. But the starting salary at McKinsey at this incredibly difficult to get into job was all in $180,000. And so I'm not saying that it's not possible, but straight out of the military, I mean, I couldn't achieve that straight out of the military. I had to go to business school for 2 years to even have a chance at that. So what I'm saying is I would encourage you to be maybe a little bit of flexible on that. And what I found in all of these interviews is that oftentimes veterans have to take a step back in their career. They have to take back a step back in their salary and in many areas in seniority in order to ramp back up to wherever they want to be. That's not to say that you can't be at 175,000. Absolutely achievable with your background. I believe that is possible. And I just would hope you have a little bit of flexibility and patience in getting there. The fourth point on that is to start to get clarity on what that looks like. And a great resource for you and all of our listeners is a free website called Glassdoor.com. Glassdoor provides reviews. They tend to be negative no matter what the company is. It's just kind of like the bitch and moan type of place on what it's like to work there. And for larger companies, they provide fairly accurate salary information. They'll give you ranges based on geographies, positions, titles, and companies. So if you combine Glassdoor.com with LinkedIn, it's a great way to start to say, okay, if your single stake in the ground is $175,000 per year, we can work with that. You can use Glassdoor to find those types of positions, and then you can use LinkedIn. So in the example I provided, using Glassdoor, you would see, hey, a consultant, that's the title, a consultant at McKinsey & Company, similar in every geography, makes $180,000, let's say, per year, all in compensation. That's salary, that's bonus, signing bonus, all of that. And so then you can say and take that to LinkedIn and do a search and say, I want to look at people who have a title of consultant or have had a title of consultant at McKinsey, and they have worked at either the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, or Coast Guard. And I strongly encourage that you use all five of those. I know that you said you're in the Army. It doesn't matter. It's the same. It's going to be the same. Like, it's just too, that's too narrow to just look for Army veterans there. So widen it a little bit. And you'll come up with a list of many, many people who have a military background who are in that role. And then you can reach out to them and say, look, I'd love to learn more about your role. What's your advice for interviewing and applying? It's the exact same thing I do on our podcast interviews. And if you attend one of our Networking 101 webinars, you'll understand a little bit more of the tactics about how to actually get a hold of those people. There's a lot of specific steps that I recommend there. And that's just kind of the last thing I'll say is the importance of networking. The way to gain clarity on if that's achievable, and if so, how to do it most efficiently, is to talk to people who have gone before you. And that is not to say if no one on the planet has gone from E7 to $175,000 in salary, that is by no means to say it's not doable. I'm not meaning to discourage you. I'm just saying success leaves clues. To be efficient, find people who have done it, learn from them, and then come up with your own strategy. That's it for the questions for this week. If you have questions, please submit them online. I'd love to get a video or an audio submission. I'll play the clip here. It breaks it up so it's not just me speaking. But I do appreciate those questions, and I'm trying to answer the ones that are a little bit more applicable to multiple people here. Or join one of our events, and you can ask us live, and we can have more of a dialogue. So I wanted to share on the personal side, this is the party in the back, personal side, and this is much more just opinions. I do think this is relevant to what I've learned in the 300 interviews I've done with Beyond the Uniform, but I want to be explicit that this is very much more about personal life and not meaning to be on a soapbox at all, but meaning to be a little bit vulnerable, transparent, and honest about things that I'm learning in my own life. So this last week, Rebecca and I were at a week-long workshop. It was called Inner Bonding. It's taught by a lady, Dr. Margaret Paul. Margaret is an incredible woman. She is 80 years old. She's seems like she's 50, and she's made Inner Bonding her life's work for the past 40 years. I respect immensely the mastery that she's built up over a lifetime of dedicated work to helping people be their best self. So I wanted to share a few takeaways I learned from this workshop because I imagine they're relevant to many of our listeners. I won't go into a ton of detail about the framework that Margaret taught us during this workshop, but I do want to give some basics just for context. But for those of you who are interested in this, you can find Margaret Paul's books online. She has multiple very successful books. You'll also find a lot of her work on YouTube. She has a lot of free videos. And I'm going to try to have her on the show in the future. I just need to think about how to frame our discussion so it's really relevant to the majority of our audience. So one overarching comment I want to get into before I get into the specific takeaways is just in general how valuable I find workshops and conferences to be. Whether it's about work whether it's about learning a new skill set, whether it's about improving my marriage, whether it's about developing a new personal growth skill set, my experience with any workshop I have ever done, and that's a blanket statement, every single workshop I've ever done has always been a net positive for me. It gets me out of my comfort zone. It helps me view things from a fresh perspective. It gives me a new tool that I can apply in my life. And it always introduces me to new people. And it's usually people I wouldn't come across normally in my day-to-day life and from whom I end up learning something really valuable. And so Rebecca and I, we've made a habit of doing at least two workshops a year. We always do them together, which also I think helps in our relationship, having a common vocabulary and skill set. In the past, if you've listened to the episode, you've probably heard me talk about some of these. We've done silent meditation retreats. We've done empathy and communication training called nonviolent communication. You've probably heard me talk about very often the men's groups that I do right now. We've done a lot of other workshops in addition to those. None of them are perfect. Just speaking for myself, I feel like all of them have pros and cons. They all have things that I dislike. They all have things that I disagree with. But overall, I find them to be very positive experiences. And that's just the general G.I. Joe style public service announcement of, I don't care what it's for. I would encourage you to find some conference or workshop that's related to anything relevant to your life. I just think it'll be a really positive experience for you and your family. And so for context, Margaret Paul, her work provides a framework that I view as tapping into one's intuition, also about reducing conflict in relationships, and overall helping people live in more alignment with their values, which is, as you know, something very important to me. She is a therapist by background, and she developed inner bonding as a six-step process that people could follow on their own so they wouldn't need to work directly or consistently with a therapist, even though that was her prior vocation. I'll go through the basic framework and then the key takeaways. For the framework, I'm going to use some terminology here. I'm just putting myself 12 years ago when I was in the military. Some of these phrases I use might not work for you. They might even be triggering. You might find them off-putting. If you're in the workshop, I think she presents this in multiple different keywords and ways of looking at it, so it might fit with your own spiritual beliefs, personal beliefs, or backgrounds. But I'm just going to use some terms that work for me, and I'll give you the framework in about 30 seconds or less, and then we'll do the key takeaways. So the premise of Margaret Paul's work is that each of us has an inner child. We each have a wounded adult who is trying his or her best to take care of and protect our inner child, and often to disastrous effects. We each have a loving adult, and this is the part of us that we can strengthen to take care of our inner child in a more skillful and a more successful way. And we each have access to guidance. Some may view this as God, some may view this as intuition. The viewpoint that helped me, that I found most helpful, was actually viewing guidance as myself 100 years from now, this much wiser, much kinder version of Justin, who is willing to help me shift perspectives on what's going on. It's actually pretty amazing if you take a problem in your life right now, or maybe a decision you're grappling with, and you ask yourself, what would myself 100 years from now recommend to do about this? There's something for me that unblocks me. It kind of unlocks some creativity, and it makes it easier for me to see the right next step to take. And so the bulk of Margaret Paul's work is going through this six-step process where you work with the inner child, the wounded adult, the loving adult, and guidance. You work with them all to learn to notice when the wounded adult, that wounded version of you, is taking charge in your life. And when we're aware that that's happening, we can slow down, we can choose to put our loving adult back in charge and take the next action to take care of ourselves and pursue our goals. That probably is not enough or explained well enough. You can find a lot more online if that component of this is important to you. But out of this week-long work, I had a lot of realizations about myself and the way that I'm wired. I found a variety of blind spots, ways that I react to situations without even realizing I'm reacting to them, and I wanted to share a few of these insights that related to themes I've heard from guests on Beyond the Uniform before. The first was realizing how I still have a deep-rooted aversion to failure. In this work with Margaret Paul, I started to realize how much fear I have about making a mistake, how I'll take drastic measures to avoid failing and being embarrassed. And I do think that some of that, definitely not all of it, maybe 10%, relates to my military experience where failure was really catastrophic, extreme consequences. It is a way that I know it's, let me just say it's helpful for me to first understand that that fear of failure is not all bad. It is doing something for me. It is my way of trying to protect myself. It's my unconscious way of trying to keep myself happy, trying to keep myself feeling secure. However, it has also been helpful for me to realize all the ways that that fear doesn't help me. It actually holds me back in what I want to achieve in life, professionally, with my family, with my community, with myself. And so an image that has been helpful for me is the way that I am with my son, Bodhi. He's 8 months old. He is just learning to walk right now. And I'm guessing any father on the planet, I am overwhelmingly happy for him. When he falls, I cheer. I'll help him back up. I will encourage him to try again. I don't have any fear whatsoever that Bodhi is not going to walk. I am not staying up at nights right now thinking, God, maybe Bodhi is just not a walker. Maybe he's going to be 18 years old and still scooting around the floor. I'm letting him make mistakes. I'm letting him tumble and get back up. I'm letting him get a few bruises and scratches when he slips because that's part of the process. And that's the image I'm trying to bring to myself, to my own inner child, as Margaret would say, that I can experience the joy of failing, that I can find peace and happiness in learning to be okay making mistakes because it's part of this bigger process. The second thing that I learned from the workshop is about giving and loving without expectation. It's not something that I realized I was doing, and I found out I do it a lot, of giving without an agenda. I was really surprised to find this as another blind spot. I almost always have an agenda right now when I do something. When I'm putting away the dishes here in my house, there's often a part of me that wants my wife, Rebecca, to notice that I'm doing that. I'm wanting her to give me praise. And maybe that will translate into the bedroom, to be honest. And so I'm giving with expectation. With Beyond the Uniform, I realized that I was often interviewing someone hoping that they would share this with their audience or support me in some way. It wasn't really generosity. There was a hidden agenda for me. If you listen to an interview I did a while back with Dr. Robert Glover, he wrote a book called No More Mr. Nice Guy, you'll remember that he called this a covert contract. I never explicitly say that I want this from another person. I never really say, if I do this, you'll do that, right? Oftentimes for me, it's something I don't even realize I'm doing. I'm subconsciously choosing to give to someone with the deep-rooted hope that it will lead to some particular outcome. And I become attached to that outcome rather than giving without expectation. And so that was the second thing that I took away. It was a really helpful lesson to me to start asking that when I say yes to something or I agree to something or I choose to do something, just asking myself, do I have an agenda here? Do I have an expectation here? Am I looking to get something back? And if I am, I really want to rethink that. I want to be in a place where I'm giving because it either aligns with what I want for myself, it aligns with the person that I want to be, or that I'm giving out of just generosity with being completely fine if nothing ever comes from it. A third thing that I took away is it is all about me. And I'll use an example from my marriage because I think that relationships are where a lot of things come out the strongest. In my marriage, I'll find myself saying things like, I need you to trust me. I just want you to appreciate all the work I'm doing. You don't understand me. Things in that variety. There's probably 100 more like that. When I get in that place, it all becomes about Rebecca. Things that Rebecca is doing wrong, things that Rebecca needs to change in order for our relationship to work. And I'm realizing how deep of a pothole this is, how it doesn't lead to connection. It doesn't lead to the love that I desire in my marriage. It doesn't lead to the example that I want to set for our son, Bodhi, about what a loving relationship looks like. Margaret said during our workshop, anytime I'm trying to get something from someone else, I'm abandoning myself and not giving it to myself. Anytime I'm trying to get something from someone else, I'm abandoning myself and not giving it to myself. I just want to read that twice. That was not a misedit there. So when I hear this, it turns on my curiosity switch in each of these scenarios with Rebecca. So when I say, I need you to trust me, what's really underneath that? I don't really need something from her. What's deeper? In this case, for me, I think what's true is I don't trust myself. I don't think that I'm capable in this situation. I'm worried I'm going to fail with this. That's where the juice is. If I learn to trust myself, it really isn't going to affect me if I think that Rebecca doesn't trust me, or anyone for that case. Same thing with the second scenario. If when I say, I just want you to appreciate all the work I'm doing, okay, let me be curious about that. What's really going on? I don't really need something from Rebecca. I need something from myself. Am I appreciating all the things I'm doing? Am I letting myself pat myself on the back and actually encourage myself for showing up as the husband and man I want to be? Do I know that I'm doing my best at contributing to a clean household? If I'm really doing this, then again, it doesn't matter what Rebecca or anyone else thinks. I'm not going to be triggered by her saying, you're not a good boy, or, you know, not recognizing it all the time. I'm not needing that from her. I just love that quote. I'll read it a third time. Anytime I'm trying to get something from someone else, I am abandoning myself and am not giving it to myself. It's really caused me to slow down when I start to get angry. And instead of judging someone around me, trying to build that muscle of becoming curious and open to learning. And I do think that it does make me feel more proactive. It makes me feel like I have everything I need and that I'm not constantly looking to others to give me. It makes me feel really self-sufficient. And that leads me to the final aspect I wanted to share. Another quote that I loved from Margaret this last week was, there are no good feelings or bad feelings. Every feeling has vital information for me. When I heard this, it made me think of a detective really trying to uncover the hidden meaning of any feeling. Usually when I'm feeling angry or sad or lonely or afraid, usually those feelings lead me to take what I would call an unskillful action. I get angry at someone. I eat junk food to feel better. I binge on Netflix to escape from that feeling. I pull away from others and cut myself off. These are all ways of me avoiding whatever that quote-unquote bad feeling is. I feel afraid, and rather than really letting myself feel that fear, I project it out. I get upset at the person I'm with for no reason. It's just a coping mechanism for me to avoid feeling that particular feeling. But what I love about the work that Margaret is doing is that it's all about slowing down and being curious. Again, every feeling has vital information for me. Am I feeling afraid? All right, let me tune into that. What is underneath that fear? What is my body trying to tell me? I remember years ago, I was walking to work in San Francisco. I walked past this homeless guy asking for money. There's a lot of that in San Francisco. And I just felt really angry. I was angry at him looking for a handout. I was angry at him for not having his shit together. I was angry at the city for not taking care of this and cleaning up the streets. There was just a lot of anger. And in that moment, I was able to catch myself in that judgment. Margaret had another great quote on this. She said, all judgment cuts off learning. So I caught myself in this judgment. I wanted to dive deeper. I wanted to open to learning and understanding. So I asked myself, okay, what is behind this anger, right? This dude's sitting there with a cup and a sign asking for money. Like, why am I judging this homeless person? And what I found in this case was, for me, it wasn't anger. It was actually fear. I think that there was something there around fear that I would be alone on the streets and helpless. Like, how terrifying that is for me, honestly, to think about, like, being broke and, like, on the streets. Fear that I would need to ask others for help in order to survive. It's still something I work on. It's difficult for me to ask people for help. I want to do things independently. I had fear that I would be ignored and looked down on. So all of this is to say that behind that initial feeling of anger, once it came under the microscope, once I was open to learning and curiosity, I realized it was actually fear. And another quote I love, I don't know who said this, but a quote I love is, anger is vulnerability's mask. There's almost always something else behind anger. And I share that just because I know that, especially for men, I think anger is a feeling that's kind of a well-worn gear for us. And I would invite you to be curious about what's underneath that. Usually it's kind of like a signal emotion that there's something deeper. And why I like that is it's like, man, let me get to the root of this, right? If I can figure out the belief that's going on beneath that or whatever is, you know, triggering that, I can nip this thing in the bud and have a lot less anger in my life. And I've just found that once I uncover that deeper emotion, then it's easier for me to take some sort of action. In this case, maybe it's me becoming more comfortable asking others for help. Maybe it's just me reassuring myself that I'm capable, I've got a great job, I'm able to provide for myself and my family. Either of those, you know, just off the cuff, they seem better to me than just being pissed off at someone on the street corner asking for money, right? It makes me happier. So that's all for today. I know that was a lot on the personal front. We've got, I guess, one or two more of these formats before we kick off the new rebroadcast format in November. Keep the questions coming. I'll answer them online or on these episodes. And know that if you're asking a question, you're helping others out. So it is an act of generosity and service. But to tie it all together, if you do it, make sure you're not looking for something in return, that it's not a covert contract. Have a wonderful week. Back Monday and Thursdays with new episodes with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.